everybody knows it's a mighty big river. Flows from Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. Drinks the Alleghenies and the mighty Rocky Mountains. Everybody knows how the Mississippi rolls from northern Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. And I know.
Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. That is one of my favorite songs because that is one of my favorite performers. His name is Jim Post, and he is on the phone from his, I guess Galena's like your hometown now, isn't it, Jim? You've been there a long time.
42 years.
How long?
42
years. You got to be kidding. It can't possibly. It can't.
Well, I'm,
go ahead.
I'm 77. What do you want?
Yeah, you're the most youthful 77 I've ever met in my life.
I have been so blessed.
Yeah, you really have, Jim. You originally, let's go back, if you don't mind, and remind people about, you came here from Texas, basically, to Chicago, right? Because Chicago was the folk capital in the 60s. Is that what?
That's not why I came here.
Why'd you come
here? I came here because of a woman.
Well, that's always the case, but I try to romanticize it a little more. So you came here from a woman who you're probably no longer in touch with. But
no,
you found
true.
It. You found in Chicago, though, I mean, you found a home for your music. You found a kind of nurturing ground here, didn't you?
Well, see, what happened was this. I saw this dancer up in Edmonton, Canada, jump out of a balcony about 8 feet. Two other dancers kind of muffled a catch, and then she flipped across the stage about five times. And I said, I want to be with that woman.
and she said, well, I'm going to Chicago?
Well, she sang so badly, they wouldn't let her sing. What I heard was, her voice sounds like a 16-year-old. And that's why I had her start out on Reach Out, so it sounded like a kid was singing it. And, it wasn't that long after we got married that we had that hit record, Reach Out of the Darkness.
That is right. There are many people who remember you as part of that. What was the name of that? It was Friend and Lover? Was it Friend and Lover or not? It wasn't Friends and Lover, right?
No, it was Friend and Lover. That's what we were to each other.
And when you wrote, Jim, when you wrote that and when that song became, and it really did become a major, major hit, did you think you had it made or what? Well, how did you feel?
Oh, I was delighted. You know, I thought I would have a bunch of hits, but I kind of, you want to hear the uniqueness of how that record hit?
Yeah.
Well, MGM gave up on it. And there was a DJ in Chico, California, who loved the song. And so he called the company and said, I'm getting five times the request I normally get on the number one song. And you should be promoting this. Oh, we've given up. You want some copies? So they sent a bunch of copies out to him. Meanwhile, he transfers to San Francisco. And while in San Francisco, they had they arrested one time 3,000 people for a sit-in they were doing. It took them out to Kazar Stadium, which is funny because the stadium itself is a protest.
Right, right.
It faces east-west instead of north-south. But it didn't matter that much in San Francisco because of the fog. And so what he did was send copies of that, song all around within 100 miles. Carrier singing that song to the local stations, not 100 miles of local stations. And then he grabbed a sound truck and went out there and started playing Reach Out of the Darkness.
Wow.
Well, the song hit all the way to the Mississippi, but New York wouldn't go on it. And then someone shot Precious Martin Luther King, and New York went on it.
Wow.
And that, and what kills me is such a simple little song, but it helped soothe the nation's nerves at a reach out.
Yeah, sure. Because it did feel like, it did. I mean, I was around then. It did feel like a kind of darkness had transcended over this over this country after that. Wow.
Especially Martin being shot and that whole year. Was it Kennedy shot that year, too?
Bobby, yep. That was
unbelievable.
That was some year. One of the things, too, that I know about your time in Chicago when you finally got here and played at the Earl. And
you want to know how that happened?
Well, of course I do, Jim. That's why you're on the radio, man.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, that's going to be good. Yeah. Right. Wait, you have to wait 20 minutes, and then Jim will tell you. Yeah.
The woman who you had call me said, she called me and I answered the phone and said, who is this?
Yes, you scared her. You scared her. But she adjusted. Elif rolls with the punches. You're not bad. You're not bad. Okay, okay, you're not just telling me. You're telling thousands of listeners, too. They want to know. I don't care. I've heard it before. The listeners want to know how you first played the Earl. You came to Chicago. You were standing on Wells Street, and you said, hey, this looks like a club.
No. We had heard that you could play in Piper's Alley.
Right.
And so I went there, and I went to the manager of the alley, and I said, can we play? And because somebody was playing there. Or else, I don't know how we got there, but we got there. We were looking for something. We were looking for the activity.
Right.
And so this kid was playing to maybe 10 people, you know. And so the manager said, yeah, you can be next. So we started singing, and pretty soon, about maybe 20 minutes, he comes out and says, you can't play here. And I went, but you just told us we could. He said, yeah, but you're stopping up the alley. You got 100 people standing there in the alley. So he said,
get out of here.
Go across the street and ask for this guy named Earl, the Earl of O-Town, and tell him I sent you over. So I said, we're going across the street. So maybe 50 people followed us into the Earl.
Well, the Earl would certainly, yeah. Well, that's good business, man. Did you meet him? Was he there at the time when walked in?
He was there in the early days a lot.
Yeah.
When we walked in, I said, the guy across the street he says, who are these people? I said, they followed us. He said,
that is a great.
You better be really bad or you're hired.
That is a great, great, great story.
So we sang for him, and then he hired us for 6 weeks, you know.
6 weeks? Wow. All right, we got to take a short commercial, Jim. I'm going to keep you on as much as I can. Jim Post, who you can learn more about if you don't know about him, at jimpost.com. If you're anywhere near Galena, you got to go see him play. He is one of the great performers of my lifetime. That's all I'm going to tell you. I'm serious. You know that. You know that, man. Mark Sapelsa travels to a small town to confront a big bully. Why one Illinois family says this bully went too far. WGN-TV investigates Monday at 9. We'll be right back. That is my friend Jim Post singing about life on the Mississippi from a terrific CD called Mark Twain's Adventures Out West. Jim is on the phone from the place he calls home, Galena, and we have gotten him. He is jammed up Piper's Alley on Wells Street. He has walked across the street, and Earl Pianchi, the owner, has hired him for 6 weeks. What, Jim, I'm not quite old enough to have experienced all of that, but you were around everybody then. I mean, John and Stevie and Bonnie and the Holstein brothers. And
The Holstein, Fred was there first.
Yeah.
And then I came in, and then Steve, and I've just been listening to Steve and John, because I was looking at Steve did this thing. He was you look it up later on. He did a Michael Johnson song called Dan Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, roving cowboy. And I it was mentioned somewhere with me, so I looked it up, and it was like, and I remember Steve wanted me to sing that tenor part and then sing the last verse. Well, they said, there's plenty of tenors here. We could get, we don't need to fly him in from San Francisco. And Steve wouldn't hear from it. No way. Jim Post has to sing this, and that's that. And so it cost him to fly me in from San Francisco and put me up for about 3 days. And I don't mind telling you, I got very emotional listening to him, thinking like,
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. I mean, you knew. I mean, the thing about that era was was, it's really kind of hard, is it not, Jim Post, to describe the creative family-like feel of those days at the Earl of Old Town? You give it a try, will you?
Well, there was. Here's an example. I wrote the song called "I Love My Life."
Mm-hmm.
So Steve. I love Kevin, but Steve's always been my favorite performer. I mean, when people ask me, I tell them Steve Goodman. Just amazing. Even Brian, one time, was complaining, said, "Damn, Post, it's like following Superman." And so anyway, and you know, Goodman found Brian. It's a beautiful story. Let's see, gosh, why can't I think of his
it's
name?
Right.
Anyway, he was there listening to Goodman and Chris Christopherson, and the guy who sang O'Donnell was there. The guy who sang worked for a record company by then. Mm-hmm. Goodman says, "You think I'm good? You ought to hear my pal." So he gets Brian in, and Brian sings seven songs for him, and then he said, "Well, do you want to hear any more?" And Chris Christopherson is reported to have said, "I'd like to hear those seven songs again."
Oh, is that right? Like, wow.
I want to make sure they're that good. And what happened was Liz Danzig, you remember her.
Oh, yeah.
She said, "Jim, I want you to recommend this guy to Earl." And so we went over to this over garage apartment, and we go up, sit down, and he's going to sing me some songs. And it was John Prine. And I'm just thinking I would go home and cut my throat.
There was, you know, that was the thing about I think, Jim, I think you, Jim Post, are a great songwriter. But the unusual thing about John was John was writing songs when he was 22 years old. I mean, he wrote Hello in there at 22, Angel from Montgomery. How do you think that, is that some kind of miracle that someone at that age could write those kind of songs, don't you think?
I can't explain creativity.
Yeah.
First, when I first went to the first grade, I was so hyper that the teacher had moved my desk up beside her desk so she could hit me.
Yeah.
And she hit me so much, she called me wacky. And so everybody called me wacky because I got whacked so much.
Sure.
So the third week started out with, "Well, class, I don't seem to be able to get Jim Post." Now, this is really a strange, wonderful thing about fate and creativity. Can't get him under control. So the first time he interrupts this show, our class today, I'm going to make him sing us a song.
Wow, is that right? Interesting.
I've been singing for my family since I was 3 and a half. There'd be nothing good on the radio, and Daddy would say, "Go get Jimmy Davis," and I'd stand on a chair and sing to my family. And even my siblings supported me. They'd come over the bedroom door so they could hear me.
Wow.
So I sat there, and I really tried to control myself, and then I forgot. She said, "You're going to sing a song." And I said, "Well, I've never sung for a bunch." She said, "A bunch of what?" I said, "A bunch of people." "A bunch of people." And she said, "Well, how do you sing?" I say, "Well, I sing to my family, and then sometimes I go out in the cow pasture, and I sing against the trees so I can hear my voice." So she said, "Well, pretend the kids are trees." Well, you know, they went nuts on that.
Oh, of course. Of course.
So I never stood for sang for anyone without standing on a chair. So I said, "Well, Miss McCarron, can I use your chair?" And she's like totally confused. I mean, yes. So I stood on the chair. And I stood there and wrote my first song because I was so nervous I couldn't remember a song I knew. So I sang about my daddy bringing ropes home from the waterfront and my brother making big swings in the woods, forest, and basically I focused on my daddy. And then when I finished that, the kids' jaws had just dropped. It was a voice that any children's choir in the world would have loved
to
have. And so then Mr. Karen says, I said, "Is that enough, Mr. Karen? Well, could you sing some more?" And then I started singing about early in the morning before I even get out of bed. Mama comes and jumps in bed with me and steals my sugar because, you know, she'd try to kiss me when I was standing up. I'd run away from her. But so she'd trap me in bed and kiss me a few times before she let me up.
Wow. So basically what you're talking about, Jim Post, is, I mean, your creativity being explored and nurtured and just there as a young kid. Jim, if you can hang on through some commercials in the news, well, I want to. I'm happy to have you on some more. Can you do that?
Yes, and remind me. I want to finish the story. Beautiful.
Of course, of course. We got to get some commercials, then we'll get some news, and then we'll carry on with Jim Post live from Galena.
I'm so glad I don't have to cross the Mississippi, or I do believe it would break my heart. I do believe it would break my heart. The rebel flag is flying over Dixieland.
That is more from Jim Post, one of the most talented singer-songwriters of our era. He was just telling us on the phone from Galena, where he has lived for 30-some years, about his sort of public debut in grammar school when the teacher made him sing. I got to ask you, Jim, to that point, are you sometimes amazed that you are now in your 77th year and you have made your life by singing and writing and entertaining? That's a rare gift, don't you think?
Yes, but let me just finish that story.
Sure.
So she says, you know, I said, is that enough, Mr. Karen? She says, could you sing some more? So I'm singing about my mother kissing me in the morning, and I'm singing away all about my mother. Tears are just rolling down her cheeks. And I said, oh, Miss McCarran, you're crying. Did I touch the spirit? Sometimes mother sits in bed while I sing in the mirror, and she cries. She says, it's because I touched the spirit. Did I touch the spirit? Sit down, Jimmy David. And then the letter went home with my older brother. Dear Mrs. Pulse, do you think Jim could come home with me next weekend and sing to the nuns?
Oh, my God. You were getting requests at an early age.
Well, she would take me home about every few weeks, and then the nuns are like, look what I got for you, Jimmy. So she took me to theater. She took me to opera. She took me to plays. She says, you're going to be an artist. And you need to be exposed to this. So,
wow, that's great.
I have to be really grateful to my first grade teacher, Miss McCarran.
Wow.
Okay, and here's what I just totally stunned about. I'm stunned by creativity.
Yeah.
It's just like, for instance, I woke up one morning, about 6 months ago, and I woke up and I could just feel it. So I grabbed my pen and I wrote, millions and millions of years ago, before God spoke to the human beast, he looked down and they were worshiping sun, rivers, and trees. So God called in a comet and set their spirits free. And then he said, let us make man in our own imagery. And we were free. And I'm sitting there for an hour thinking, what on earth is that about? And so I really focused on it a long time. And then, you know, I believe in evolution. I think that we happen. And then all of a sudden we evolved in spiritual beings seeking. We knew there was something bigger than us, you know.
Well, I know you have told me in the long time I have known and enjoyed you. Even it was last summer you told me this amazing story that tells me, you know, Mark Twain was 74 when he died. You are older than Mark Twain was.
He's actually 75.
Was he? Okay, yeah, well, maybe he lied on his birth certificate. But you were telling me a great story that, and it told me, again, Jim Post, how you were able to see in a way that many people can't. You were saying that, you know, just a couple days ago, I was looking out my front first floor window at a bunch of trees in the distance, and all of a sudden this bear walked up and stared.
But it wasn't a bear. I meant to say deer.
Oh, I thought it was a bear. I thought you were scared. I thought he said...
No, I thought like... When I saw that article he wrote, I cracked up laughing. I went,
You told me it was a bear, and because you said at one point you were afraid it was going to like eat you or something.
No.
Oh. Well, that's
why were you smoking?
Me. Well, life is funny that way. Jim, let me ask you about Galena. I mean, why did you fell in love with Galena 30 years ago, and it's been your home for as long as
42.
Wow, it's been your home as long as any place has been your home. I know it's inspired a lot of your music. One of your great shows, a one-man show called Galena Rose that I saw at Orchestra Hall many years ago, it certainly inspired you in a lot of ways. How was it nurtured and enlivened your creativity?
Well, first you come here and you find out, you know, when I first moved here, before this became a party town, we have incredible amounts of women coming in groups to party down. Mm-hmm. But we would set the bars and talk about history. And it was fascinating. Yeah. I mean, 9 generals, 6 governors for the states, diplomats, Secretary of War, and Lincoln would never have been elected without Galena, because we sent 5 huge bags of money into a Chicago convention, and they went in the back room and threw the big bags of money on the table and said, if it's Lincoln, the money stays. And I think the influence this little city had in it, because it was so rich. And why whiskey won the West,
sure,
is because they had no money they trusted. So you would say, oh, okay, I'll give you 3 quarts of whiskey. Oh, it's got 3 quarts of whiskey. And so, but I got to tell you a great story about this. This woman comes up to me, and she's upset about something. She says, I saw you 26 years ago. I said, that sounds like Chicago. Yes. I said, at the Civic Center, Opera House. She said, right, I was with Pavarotti. And so I said, were you with Miss Pavarotti, the shoe salesman on State Street? Or were you with Pavarotti? She said, that one. And so I went, wow, how long did he stay? And then she gets really, I knew, I was working on 6th floor. And I was at the walkover, so I could go listen to opera, plays, whatever was going on. Set up 6 stories and to hear it welling up, you know, up to fly. And so, and I said, how long do you stay? And then she gets really mad. She says, the whole show. And I said, well, what was wrong with that? I said, he promised to leave at halftime because we had a dinner party set for him. But he wanted to see what happened to Galena. And do you know what he said about you? And I said, yeah, what did he say? He said, you could have been an opera singer. Why aren't you an opera singer? And I said, why aren't you polite?
That's a charming encounter. I also got to believe that people have come to see you in Galena year after year after year.
True.
That you've seen some of their kids grow up.
Absolutely. It's amazing. I mean, like, and I kissed a 100-year-old woman about 3 weeks ago.
What was that like?
Well, it was really funny because she was there with her whole family. I mean, there were 30 people with her.
Yeah.
And so I said, and she said, she came here on her 100th birthday. She wanted to be here to hear you. So I said, can I kiss you?
Aww.
And she, like a little girl, she says, yes. So she puckered up like a little girl kiss. Man, I locked down on her. I mean, I kissed her a good minute. And their family's going, all right.
The family have to drag you off her?
They were just having a ball. They go, all right, Mimi, all right. You know, whatever nickname they have. And when I let go, she took her right hand and put it over her heart. She said, she said, be still, my happy heart.
Oh, that's a sweet story. That's a sweet story. You also, Jim, before I let you go, I want to talk to you about, it was a few months ago that you got this unbelievable burst of contemporary fame when Jimmy Fallon did something to you. What did he do?
Well, he was going to laugh at I Love My Life, which is a horrible album cover. The album cover made a book called The Worst Album Covers of All Time.
Right. Well, it's pretty bad, right?
Well, yeah. Well, the reason it was bad is because that shower I was taking, these people had grown thin, these thin, I've never seen them in person, but they're, except they're tall plants. And basically, I was totally surrounded by these plants. And they are, and you can only see from, you know, a little bit below my chest up. And the, he took that away, so it looks like I'm showing off of something. And it's called I Love My Life, which I'll go into the story of Goodman.
Right.
I sing two verses of I Love My Life. The first verse is my mama and daddy didn't plan me. They tried to abort me, actually. Mm. And then I drowned in the bayou, and our next-door neighbor, who was a Cajun voodoo practitioner, yanked me out of the bayou and put me on my stomach and hit me as hard as she could in the back. And mother said, told mother later, I don't know why I did that. And she said, but something just told me, and it just knocked everything out. And so that night when I came home, daddy came home at 12:30. I'd go outside at 12:30 for 2 hours, even though I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
But I had a dog that weighed 150, 160 pounds. And so anyway, he says, come here, Jimmy David. And he sent me on his knee and said, what happened to you today? I said, I drowned. You drowned? Yeah, I drowned. And but I know these stories because my family told these stories over and over.
Sure.
I said, well, what happened then? I saw God. What did God look like? It was this bright, bright, bright light. But you could look right at it, and it felt warm, and you knew it was God. Oh, what happened then? My grandpa sent me home, and mother said, but Jim, your grandpa lives in Louisiana. Then it hit her. She said, oh, my God, James, it was my dad. And, oh, man, that was a cry fest. And I thought, I'm never going to drown it again.
Wow.
I'll make my parents cry.
Yeah. Wow.
But anyway, so I've had a ridiculously happy childhood, and
you've had you've also had a pretty happy life, Jim. I got to tell you,
I have, yeah.
Yeah, I really think.
Oh, so I didn't finish I Love My Life.
Yeah, right.
Goodman, sorry. So I sing the two verses for him, and the second verse is about drowning. So Goodman says, "You got to have a third verse," and I went, "Well, yeah, you're right." He says, "How did these two things affect you? These are two dramatic things.
Sure,
they had to affect you." And I said, okay, yeah, all right. He said, now. I went, you know, Goodman may have weighed 120 pounds, but when he was determined, he weighed 300, you know?
Right, right.
And I said, but I come see you. Write it down. I want you to sing it for the audience at the end of the evening. So I'm back there writing and working on it. And Goodman's show ends. He says, hey, Post, have you finished it? And I went, yeah, I have. And he says, I said, but I don't know it. He says, is it written down? I went, yeah. I says, well, come on out and sing it. I'll hold it for you, the third verse. So the third verse goes, every day of my life is a celebration. I love it even when I'm blue. Up against a wall of stone desperation, I do my best to love that too. When I start to cry, I fall into laughter. I have to laugh in the face of disaster because I nearly didn't live my life. Ain't that a shame? I never would have got to sing. Ain't that a shame? Naked little brown-skinned boy running in the Texas rain. And I love my life. I love my life. I do. Wow. Which reminds me of Daddy saying, does Jimmy David have some shards on it, at least?
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to end this, Jim. It's always great talking to you. Ladies and gentlemen, go to the website, jimpost.com. And get yourself out sometime over the winter to Galena and see him. He is an American. Don't be overwhelmed by this, Jim, but I'm calling you an American treasure. You really are.
Oh,
you're a good friend. And you're
and
a good
they
friend.
Need to see Galena in the winter.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sending you my CD, Christmas in Galena. I don't think you have that, The Heart of Christmas, do you?
Yeah, I do. I have it somewhere. Jim, you're the best, pal. Take care of yourself.
No, you're the best.
And good health. Good health. Take care of yourself. We'll be right back.
Everybody come out. Bye-bye.
Bye. Believe me, Galena, in the winter is a beautiful, beautiful place, and Jim Post plays there. And here, because he's from Texas, here's Jim Post singing about being a cowboy.
I'm gonna leave the States behind me, headed out for Western land. On Nevada slopes, I have every hope of becoming a wealthy man. I'll wake up every morning, jump, jump, I'm on my way. But I need a mule for the silver and gold that I dig up every day. Or maybe I'll be a cowboy out on the western plains, with Spanish spurs that jingle jangle every step I take. A bowie knife stuck in my boot, revolver in my belt, swaying in the saddle, singing to the cattle. Yippee-ti-yi-yay, yippee-ti, yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yippee-ti-yi-yay, yippee-ti, yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yippee-ti-yi-yay. Maybe I'll live through an Indian raid and only lose my scalp. I'll show my scars in all the bars, free drinks for me, no doubt. Maybe I'll look like a famous crook and they hang me from a tree. What a lucky stroke, hung by a rope, a legend I will be. Or maybe I'll be a cowboy out on the western plains, with Spanish spurs that jingle jangle every step I take. A bowie knife stuck in my boot, revolver in my belt, swaying in the saddle, singing to the cattle. Yippee-ti-yi-yay, yippee-ti, yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yippee-ti-yi-yay, yippee-ti, yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yippee-ti-yi-yay, yippee-ti, yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yippee-ti-yi-yay. Yahoo!
Before you hear another couple of commercials, I just want to remind you that the two guests we had on today on After Hours were Charles Troy, and you can find, these are the two simplest website addresses I think I've ever told you about. Charles Troy is charlestroy.com, and Jim Post, even easier, is jimpost.com. I do also want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I know it can be stressful for a bunch of people, but it is Thursday, and I hope it is not stressful for you.